D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, Sportsnet, NHL Insider, Elliot Freeman, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, don't think we didn't hear you wonder aloud on your podcast about whether Jonathan Marchessault and the Toronto Maple Leafs could be a match this offseason. And I know you were spitballing. But you spitballing is different than me spitballing. So how realistic do you think that actually is?
Yeah, Adam, honestly, that was a pure spitball. I make it very clear.
You did, yes.
Yes. You know, I just, you start to sit and you start to think about things that may match. And I wanted to make it very clear that ultimately it's the player's choice, because Marchessault has the power. And I've not asked him, and I've got no idea if he would even want to do that. He may not have any desire at all to do that. But you're sitting there and you're looking at fits, and, you know, I don't need to tell you, it was a tough season, Nashville. Pieces didn't all fit. There were some hard feelings. The Predators would like to make some changes. I'm a big Marchessault fan, last year notwithstanding. I think he's the kind of player that can really help a good team. I was just playing, like, I was like your grandmother, Adam. I was playing matchmaker.
fair enough. My grandmother did not set me up with my wife, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I use this thing called the phone, which is how people meet.
Yeah, that's right.
We are all awaiting the fallout, as I know you are, of the Toronto Maple Leafs elimination from the Stanley Cup playoffs in a tough Game 7 loss to the Florida Panthers. You reported yesterday that Brendan Shanahan has been granted permission by the Maple Leafs, despite the fact that his contract is expiring in only a month or so. He's been granted permission to talk to the New York Islanders about an opening in their front office. What sort of ripple effect will Shanahan's seemingly inevitable departure have inside the Maple Leafs organization?
I think that's to be determined, Adam. The Maple Leafs are owned, at least for now, by three parties. There's two telecom companies. There's Rogers, who I work for, owns 37.5%. Bell, who is the other telecom, owns 37.5%. And a gentleman by the name of Larry Tenenbaum owns the other 25%. Now, Rogers is in the process of buying out Bell. It may be done, if not today, soon. So they'll own 75%, and they're going to have control. But the board is meeting today, and they hired a new president and CEO, a guy by the name of Keith Pelley, who used to be a TV executive, and he took over a year ago. But he kind of sat back and waited and didn't make any immediate change. He wanted to feel his way around. There were some contracts that still had to expire. But it's believed that today he's going to make his plan to the board. And, you know, that could lead to changes both on the Maple Leaf side and the Raptors side. So we're waiting to hear the news. You know, the fact that they gave the Islanders permission to talk to Shanahan, as you said, Adam, leads to indicate that his footing is not exactly solid. But we don't know if it's going to go down any deeper than that. One of the things I do believe, though, is that the Maple Leafs have a very big staff. For example, they have five assistant general managers. So one of the things we've talked about and heard is that they're going to streamline their operation. So I think while we've heard a lot of these rumors, we're still waiting to see what that's going to mean. Sometime after this meeting, we should have a better idea.
The Edmonton Oilers suffered a tough loss last night, 6-3 to the Dallas Stars. The Dallas power play was en fuego at the start of the third period as they rallied from an early deficit. There is a player on the Edmonton Oilers whose upcoming contract negotiations I am absolutely fascinated by, and that's Evan Bouchard. Evan Bouchard has been fabulous in his postseason career. The stat is out there that only Bobby Orr has averaged more points per game in the playoffs among defensemen in NHL history, if I recall that correctly. And even without Matthias Ekholm by his side throughout the postseason, Bouchard continues to be excellent on the back end for the Oilers. What do you think that negotiation is going to look like? What kind of contract could Bouchard end up with this summer?
It's going to be a big one because the numbers dictate it. You know, Bouchard is arbitration eligible if he doesn't sign an extension, Adam. And arbitration is all about the numbers, the figures. And that says it's going to be a big number because he puts up points. You know, I'll say this. Bouchard is a really talented guy. It just seems like every mistake he makes ends up all over the highlights because they turn into like a big play against. And, you know, that's the thing about him is that he's polarizing. He's really talented. He can play with good players, which is not a small thing. But, you know, the mistakes he makes tend to be glaring. And I think it's actually going to be one of the more interesting cases is what is his next contract going to be, because the numbers dictate it's going to be massive. And we're all wondering, how do the Oilers feel about that? Connor McDavid, he's eligible to sign an extension on July 1st. He's got one more year left on his current contract, and he is worth a bazillion dollars. I think we're all curious to see, what is that number going to be? And sooner or later, you can't sign everyone. And I think people wonder exactly what that's going to mean for Bouchard.
Elliot Friedman is with us. So, yeah, I know we're going to, you know, let's not put the cart ahead of the horse. But how much groundwork do you think the Oilers have made knowing that this has been coming for a long time with McDavid? Now that they have the certainty, they've watched what the Avalanche chose not to do and move on from Rantanen, I guess for the reason of they didn't want too many guys. And I saw a stat the other day, Elliot, that really shocked me, that no team has ever had a player making more than $10 million win the Cup. Bobrovsky makes exactly 10. And I didn't cross-check that to verify that that's true, but I think
it's,
I know.
True.
Okay, and so with Oilers knowing all this, or do you think they're making progress? What do you think they have in mind for McDavid?
Whatever he wants.
Yeah. And as they should, you know, right? But at the same time, they're seeing that stat and they know how close they've come.
Here's the thing about that stat, though. Like, that stat is true, but now $10 million is much less a percentage of the cap as it used to be, right?
Totally.
So, while the number's true, I think it's a little bit different. And don't forget, last year, McDavid came within one win of the Cup, right? So, you know, he's right there. Like, they're right there. I think this. I'll tell you a story. So, last time Connor McDavid had his contract come up, which was 7 years ago, him and his agents walked in there and they said, look, like, the maximum you can make in the NHL is 20% of the cap. So, right now the cap is 87.5. So, the most you can make is 87.5 times 2, which is $17.5 million. Back then it was a smaller number, but they went in there and they said, look, we're not going to ask for 20%. And the Oilers were like, thank God, because we would have given it to you. And they initially, the agreement was 8 years at $13.33 million. And that kind of got out, and McDavid was like, nah. He just said, you know what, it's too much. I could give more to the other players in the cap, make a better team, so settle at 12.5. Now, I think there's going to be, I don't even know if it's pressure, but I think there's going to be an understanding that McDavid has to move the line. The number one guy right now is his teammate Draisaitl, 14, but I don't think he's going to take the max number. The interesting thing about a guy like Bouchard is, so the president of the Oilers, Jeff Jackson, he left being an agent to take over the presidency of the Oilers. His firm represented Bouchard. So that adds another layer to all of this. I think they recognize that Bouchard is young. He's a scorer. He's an important player to that team. But I think there's a limit. And I'm really curious to see where they're going to decide that limit is.
Every year, one of the compelling things about watching the Oilers is to see if they can win it with the superstars making what they make and with a, as the kids would call it, a mid goalie, right? And because we argue about it here all the time about how much you should pay a really good goalie. You've been in on the conversations with Saros, and everybody's stressed that Saros had a down year and now he's going to be paid more, even though in the big picture, as you just got talking about, the cap's up, so the percentage he's going to make isn't really that high. But that aside, how much did a loss like that just sting, where they sort of had control of the game? I don't know how much you would put on Skinner in that game, but it's always like they're trying to carry the goalies around or really hope that the goalies overachieve.
Yeah, that one would sting. Like, if they lose that series, they're going to remember game one all summer. There's no question about that. When you're up 3-1 in the third period, especially the way they've played, you would think they would have knocked that one down. There's a couple of other concerns. Dallas was getting no scoring from anyone other than their first line. You know, their first line is Hintz, your buddy Granlund, and Rantanen. And when those guys were off the ice, they were getting caved in. And now Duchesne scores, breaks his slump. Sagan scores twice, breaks his slump. All of a sudden, these guys are feeling really good about themselves again, right? So you don't like that. That's not good. Secondly, you know, the thing about Skinner is he's really hit or really miss. Like, he just is. Like, either he shuts you out, as he did to Vegas twice in a row, or Bizarro World happens. And it's not really a great way to live if you're a team. It's too erratic. But I think now you kind of understand that as long as he's your goalie, you're going to have to live with some of that. And you're right. Last night wasn't all on him. Last year in their series, the Western Conference Final, I think Edmonton was either perfect on the penalty kill or they only gave up one. They gave up three in game one. It's just a bad sign for all of that. And I still think Edmonton, they've got a good mentality. They'll roll their eyes and they'll put it behind them as long as they're playing. But if they lose that series, they'll regret that one all summer. All summer.
And now to the Saros part. I'm curious, and I know you're not watching the World Championships very closely, and to be honest, I'm not watching all of the games myself, but I have noticed that so far, UC Saros has played tremendously for Team Finland, and I'm looking for positive signs that he could sort of rebuild after a really tough year mentally, I'm sure, for him. What have you seen over the years of what a good World Championship performance can do for a player's mentality and confidence?
Well, I would look at Anaheim's young goalie, Dostal. So last year, the media tour in Europe was in Prague, and it was just after the Czechs had won. And that Dostal, who's the goalie in Anaheim, he was their starter. And all the NHL guys were raving about him, like just raving about him. Even the other goalies, guys like Peter Mrazek and Vemelka from Utah, who didn't get to play because he was playing so well, they were raving about him. And he took another step this year. He had a pretty good year. And one of the reasons Anaheim believes that it can win eventually is because of what this kid did at the World Championships. So I do believe in it. I know there's a lot of teams out there that really want their guys to go play in that tournament if they've had a rough year, because there's something about playing for your country that snaps you back to attention, that gets you focused, that makes you feel something important. And, you know, we'll see how the medal round goes, but he beat Canada. That's never bad. Everybody always wants to beat Canada. So, you know, it's not a bad thing for Saros at all, as long as it ends positively.
Yeah, and you made the important point. The medal round hasn't happened yet. We'll see if it can continue. But the win over Canada definitely got some people's attention over here. So, Elliot, let's hit on the East. The Panthers, they seem to be really grooved in this, hitting on all of the notes that they are kind of the bullies that initiate, know not to retaliate, and really fluster the opposition. And, of course, they've got enough skill and talent to be better as well. They look like they are the complete package right now.
Oh, they are. They are. And, you know, the Maple Leafs pushed them to the limit, but when it really mattered, they manhandled them. And, you know, Carolina looked as good as anybody in the playoffs, and in game one, they manhandled them. You know, I thought Marchand said it best in game seven. Like, we know what to do. He wasn't there last year when they won, but he's an experienced player, and he joins a team. They all understand what their roles are. Paul Maurice makes all of them feel important. Everybody here is important. And whether you play 25 minutes a night or you play 9 minutes a night, your role is important, and everybody understands the way they've got to play. Toronto, like I said, Toronto pushed them right to the limit, but they never panicked. Toronto probably should have won that series, but they didn't, because these guys know how to play. So I just look at it that way. They don't beat themselves. They really don't beat themselves, so you got to find a way to beat them.
I wonder in 20 years, this is a question for another show, and maybe more of a question for Toronto, if they can be rational about it, which I'm sure it's hard to do right now. But,
which we can.
Right, yes. But the Panthers someday might be considered a great, great team that we look back on, especially if they win it again this year. Tampa, we know, was one of the greatest teams of the last, definitely of the salary cap era, but you could argue of the last 30 or 40 years. And that's who Toronto has had to get through in the first couple of rounds. And so putting that in perspective makes you maybe think differently, at least from afar, and not this failure of a franchise. At least it makes it understandable a little bit more, but that's if you're more rational and the 40,000-foot view, probably.
I think about that all the time, Willie. I really do. I always think about that. Like, you know, for example, Colorado lost round one. Does that mean Colorado's a failure? They would probably say yes, because they lost in the first round. But I always look at, because of the different playoff setup we have, I always look at who do you lose to as opposed to when you lose. Now, Toronto's disappointed because they haven't had a second-round win in 23 years, and they should have won. Like, they probably should have beaten those guys. But I do look at it like it's Florida, and you have to understand that it is Florida. But that doesn't – here, it doesn't erase the disappointment. And also, part of the issue, Willie, is that its contracts are up, right?
Sure.
So sometimes you get to make the decisions. It's like life. And sometimes the decisions get made for you. And this might be a case in Toronto where the decisions are made for you.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, joining us on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, great stuff as always. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Elliot Freeman joining us on the program. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Stanley Cup playoffs. But coming up next, we reveal our nominee for World's Biggest Dirtbag. We'll do that coming up next. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, Willie Donick, 1025, 1063, the game. D-Mace Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. So, as I said, we're going to unveil our nominee for World's Biggest Dirtbag, and I'm saying that, of course, tongue-in-cheek. But Brett Favre not painted in a positive light in the latest edition of Untold, the Netflix sports documentary series called The Fall of Favre. It was an interesting watch, and these Untold documentaries, these mini docs, they're hit or miss for me. I watched the one recently about Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenton and their time on the Washington Wizards. And I like that one because I was living in Washington at that time, so I remember that story happening in real time.
Yes. It's breaking news. It's about the national championship break. They've reseeded. It said the executive unanimously adopted a move to straight seeding from this year's playoffs in a call today. Teams will be seeded directly.
That's okay.
Teams will be directly seeded directly from 1 to 12, eliminating the concept that designed the top four seeds for conference champs.
So this is from Ross Dellinger reporting that CFP executives unanimously adopted a move to straight seeding for this year's college football playoff. Mm-hmm. As Derek said, teams will be seeded directly on the rankings 1 through 12, eliminating the concept that designated the top four seeds for conference champions. And we can discuss that a little bit more at length tomorrow. But this untold about Brett Favre. They started sort of with Brett Favre's origin story at Southern Miss. A lot of it was focused on Jen Sturger, the ex-New York Jets employee who was the recipient of some unwanted text messages.
Unsolicited
text messages from Brett Favre. And I believe this is the first time that she has spoken at length about how this has impacted her life. The final section of the mini-doc was about the Mississippi welfare scandal that Brett Favre has been embroiled in over the past few years. And, you know, I think they even mention at the end, it may have been Jen Sturger at the end of the documentary, says people are going to watch this and it's not going to change their mind about Brett Favre. But it does feel at the moment that Brett Favre has gotten off scot-free on a lot of these things that he's done.
I think from a actual paying a price of paying back the money, it doesn't look like the money has been paid back. And I do think he definitely got off scot-free about the whatever
Jen
form
Sturger
of harassment
stuff.
Do you want to talk about. Mm-hmm. The picture, the text, the effect it had, he was not punished for that at all. Mm. I do think that as we look at Brett Favre right now, and we sort of watch how much he's in the public eye right now, I think he's sort of in the penalty box where you're not seeing him endorse products. You're not seeing him being asked to give his perspective on a national show. Am I wrong? Like
I think he's sort of been
put out into the limbo, kind of like, Brett Favre, let's not really go there. Mm-hmm. I think he has paid a price from that standpoint. But I think what I wanted to know from the documentary that I didn't know, I didn't learn a whole lot. It was very interesting to hear the woman's perspective. I thought she was really good because she did admit that, hey, look, I played the game to advance quickly in the business. I didn't shy away from it. And she balanced all of that what happened to her.
She famously wore a bikini to a Florida State football game because she went to Florida State. Now, she actually explained in the documentary that she had a bartending shift before she went to the game.
Right.
And someone spilled something on her shirt, so she just took off her shirt and went to the game because it was going to be hot in September.
And she wore the bathing
suit. In Tallahassee. Yeah. And then Brent Musburger had the infamous line, 1,500 red-blooded Americans are, teenagers, whatever it is, are applying to Florida State right now.
It's a good line by Brent.
Yes.
Brent Musburger, we were not shy to go down that road during a broadcast. We remember A.J. McCarron's girlfriend.
Remember it all.
Whatever, or wife. Or, I guess it was girlfriend.
It was his girlfriend at the time.
But so that was it. That was, I think, compelling to hear that whole perspective from her, because I think she was pretty level-headed about it. She didn't go out of her way to blast. She just kind of presented what was going on. But what I thought fell short was I don't understand why there isn't more of an effort going on in Mississippi right now to recoup the money, which clearly has already been spent, but find a way to pay back the state.
And
basically,
most of it was spent on a volleyball gym, right?
Yes.
At the University of Southern Mississippi.
They called it a stadium. I've never heard a volleyball arena called a stadium.
Me
but
either.
Everybody referred to it as
but
a volleyball
Favre's
stadium.
Daughter was a volleyball player. Yes.
Right.
Southern
that, that's the
right.
center of it, right? He got money directly for himself, about $1 million, for his foundation.
That should have been used for disadvantaged citizens.
Right.
Of
all of the money came from the welfare
exactly.
fund. $5-something million for the volleyball facility, some for him and his foundation, and some for this company that was developing a product that supposedly helped for concussions that flopped, was not approved, mm-hmm. and, you know, just like a lot of upstart companies, needed money to stay alive, and so he got a couple million for that, and eventually it didn't work. The product was not...
It's a dud.
It's a dud. It just didn't work. It was probably... Snake oil when you come down to
it,
right?
Yeah, just talk fast.
Yeah,
just sell product.
A magic pill that cures you from
concussions.
It didn't happen, but nobody's gotten the money back, right? Mm-hmm. There's other people that have been charged and everything like that, but he hasn't paid a price there.
Nobody's went to jail. Nobody completely, unless something has changed since they've done the documentary. Nobody has been penalized. There are some people that have been charged, but nobody's in jail for this. Damn sure Brett Favre's not in jail. He's a scumbag, plain and simple. And I'm not even talking about the Jen Sturger stuff. That's over there. That's not what I'm talking about, people. He's a scumbag. Anytime you're taking money from underprivileged people, and you know you're taking it, to do something that you should do with your own money, build a facility, because your daughter's... at a university or whatever it was.
He's got that Wrangler university. Jeans money.
Yeah.
He could
to
have
build
done it.
A volleyball stadium, you're a scumbag, plain and simple.
He knew it was wrong.
Anybody that's taking money from someone that is underprivileged, underserved, and you know you're taking the money from them, and you're doing something nefarious, you are a damn scumbag. Brett Favre, you're a scumbag. Plain and simple.
There were those text messages that were involved in the legal filings, right, where Brett Favre said something to the extent of, they're not going to know where the money came from, right? You're not going to tell them where the money came from,
right? We can do this with the media not figuring it out, right?
Right.
And when you say that,
you know
you're doing something
wrong. This is
all
alleged, of course. This
exactly,
is all
allegedly.
Alleged,
but the texts are there.
Exactly.
Yes, The texts are there. But one interesting choice that the documentarians made was including Michael Vick. So the first person you see in the sort of testimonials that they're doing is Michael Vick. And my first thought was, why is Michael Vick on this? What relationship does he have to Brett Favre? And it was his way and the documentarians' way, I think, of pointing out the hypocrisy in the way that Michael Vick was treated by the NFL and by society when he had the dogfighting ring early in his career versus what's been going on with Brett Favre.
And listen, I know there are a bunch of dog lovers out there. I'm a dog lover. And cruelty to animals isn't the way to go. And you should have to pay a penalty.
I was living in the area at the time because it was happening, I think, in Newport News,
which
is not far from where I grew up. And it was a huge story.
And he paid for it. He had to atone for his sins.
Two years in prison, I think.
And nobody ever let him forget about it. But Brett Favre allegedly steals money from people that need the money more than you, that needs the money more than your daughter needs that a volleyball court or volleyball stadium. Allegedly, you stole money from them. We have recordings. You have text messages. You stole the money from him, allegedly. So there's the hypocrisy. Nothing is done to you, but everything is done to him. And he deserved it. Michael Vick, whatever happened to him, he understands he deserved it. There's remorse there. Even when Michael Vick was remorse, people still didn't want to accept that. But talked about Brett Favre, people don't care. Him stealing from poor people, you don't care about that. Seriously. I don't understand. I really don't understand this. I really don't. I understand why they put Michael Vick on there now. Because they wanted to show the hypocrisy of one guy who did something wrong and he had to pay for it. Plain and simple. And everybody, you know, made him out to be just this horrible person. Okay, I get it. But the other guy does something, and everybody seems to forget about it, don't want to talk about it, excuse it. It's just like the hypocrisy, even the NFL with the Jen Sturger stuff. He didn't get suspended for that. He got fined, but the NFL washed their hands of it. I don't know if he got fined. Maybe he did. But he did not get suspended. That I do know.
It was swept under the rug.
Yeah, it was swept. I mean, you didn't hear about it after a while.
He was fined $50,000 for failing to cooperate with the investigation.
For failing to cooperate.
$50,000. He wouldn't admit what happened. I thought the Vic part of it was an interesting way that they sort of just had it as a periphery mm-hmm. question, but they didn't have Michael Vick. I think Michael Vick probably didn't want to sidetrack the whole documentary on Brett Favre about that question of, but here's a guy sitting there going, I paid the maximum penalty for something that I did wrong.
And he deserved to.
I could argue that what Brett Favre did was even lower and more of a low, you know, more of a serious violation, right, of mankind, right? A worse thing to do. $8.5 million basically stolen from people that needed it really, really bad. What's worse, the dog fighting? And that question is never really asked, but it's sort of out there. Right, it's presented, but it's not really answered. It's left for the viewer to answer. But I think Michael Vick, without saying it in the documentary, is like, I paid a penalty, a big penalty. Brett Favre has never really paid a big penalty. In fact, Brett Favre is still playing the card of, I didn't know where the money went, and I've been smeared, and all look at the media, and it just doesn't fly.
I don't understand when you.
But why doesn't he pay a price? If I'm Michael Vick, I would be wondering that myself.
They got you in a recording. They have all this stuff.
It's in the court documents.
Why hasn't he been held accountable for the things that he's done? Somebody really explain that to me.
615-737-1025. Jared Stillman coming up next. I'm sure he'll be thrilled about our apology, which never came. We'll talk to Jared next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Stillman and Company coming up next. So we bring in our friend, Jared Stillman. And Jared, I just want to repeat what I said earlier to quote Larry David. No apology is forthcoming.
Yeah, I didn't expect that. I demanded an apology knowing it wasn't going to happen. It's kind of like when these politicians nowadays say, like, I demand that so-and-so resign. You know, like, it's not going to happen, but they get to say it and it makes them feel good. And it made me feel good yesterday to say that because I know you guys are smart. I know where you all went to college. I know, Adam, you're a capital J journalist from a capital J journalism school. Willie, you went to Vanderbilt. Derek, you played with Jim Miller. I mean, at some point, like,
hey, man, represent my school well. Say Michigan State, man. Don't leave my school out.
You played for Nick Saban.
Don't pull my
you guys think that it was really a helmet to the quad in the Colts game, and that's why he's still hurt today.
Hey, Will, Jerry, my thing with you was it could have just as well been a helmet or whatever to the thigh. But with that and the knee that you already got to manage, it is going to affect your knee. He could have been completely honest with saying it was a quad injury. Now, the way they handled it when it happened to when Snead finally said, hey, I had surgery, is probably not the best way you handle a situation. But I'm not going to sit here and say, well, no, he hurt his knee and it really wasn't a thigh. If he told me it was the thigh, I believe it was the thigh. But I do believe also that because of the thigh, it is bothering the knee.
If he told you that he wasn't involved in a shooting at the car dealership, would you believe that?
But Jared, you're honestly saying that there was never, your theory is that there was no helmet to the thigh ever?
I didn't say that.
You've been saying that.
Was that he was out for the rest of the season because of the helmet to the thigh. I don't believe.
Okay, but you saw Ryan
because of the helmet to the thigh.
Yes, that could happen. It could happen. Ryan Johansson, you saw that injury to the thigh, right? That had him in the hospital and missed the next several months in a compartment.
Didn't he finish the game?
Yes, he did finish the game.
Okay.
But wasn't he ready for the start of the next season?
He was, but that was a serious injury there.
So that was June, July, August, September, and he was ready. I mean, this has been October, November, January, February, March, April, May.
Right,
this
because it was complicated. Like, as Derek said,
if Legarius Sneed had been impregnated when the helmet hit the quad, which I think is equally as likely as this being the injury, he'd almost be having the baby today.
So when you already have a bum knee, which Johansson didn't, but when you already have a bum knee and then you get hit in the quad, whatever it was with the quad, it was severe enough that it caused him to miss multiple games and then ultimately the whole season. When you're already dealing with a bad knee and you have that quad on the same knee, don't you think it's going to take a little bit longer for all of it to come back?
Don't you think surgery on your knee? Yeah, I do think that.
Well, what if you have surgery on your quad? A procedure on your quad, don't you think it still would be with a already bum knee? Don't you think it still would be, you know, harder, or it's going to take a little bit longer to get back? Because one, the knee was never really, they had to manage the knee already. So don't you think having surgery on my quad or having a procedure on my quad would lengthen the rehab process? Because Jared, the knee is already damaged somewhat.
Jared, this is the point. I'm not a doctor or anything like that, and neither are you, but you're making assumptions. I'm just saying that a helmet to the thigh can be very, no two injuries are the same. I don't even know if it was compartment syndrome involved or anything close to it with Sneed, but a helmet to the thigh can be a very serious injury. That's my point.
I just think that, like, sure, a helmet to the thigh, he could accidentally hit an artery and cause, you know, like, I guess. I mean, anything's possible. We saw DeMar Hamlin die on the football field. But I just don't think that whatever happened to Sneed's quad, I just don't think it's that serious. I think the Titans
right, and you have zero evidence to base it on. Zero.
I told you guys he was walking around with a brace in the locker room.
Right, and that's very circumstantial, and
there's a lot of circumstantial evidence here.
So my witness,
you're also making assumption that he really isn't in a hurry to start playing football anytime soon.
I don't think Legarius Sneed will ever take another snap for the Titans.
Oh, okay. I mean, okay.
And do you think that's because of his injury or because of his legal situation?
Exactly.
I think that the Titans would overlook the legal situation if the injury thing wasn't always going to be a problem.
So you think he won't play because of the legal situation, or is it the injury?
I believe that the Titans know that they should not have made that deal, that he's damaged goods. What everybody else was saying, and they said, oh, it'll be fine. They know that they were wrong and everybody else was right. And if the commissioner suspends him, they'll release him and keep all
the. So what if the commissioner doesn't suspend him?
Then I think they'll try, but I think he'll be hurt next season. He'll still be recovering from that.
They'll try what?
Willie is convinced to do.
What would they try? You said they'll try. What would they try? To trade him?
You're saying they're going to cut him?
Oh, cut him? They're not going to cut him.
He'll be on the team next year if they can't get out of the money, but I don't think he'll play. I think he'll still be hurt.
You think he will not play a single game if he's on the roster?
Correct.
Okay. Well,
so he'll be on injured. You're saying he'll be on injured reserve then, and they'll just pay the money, but secretly he could play. You're just saying they don't want him to play?
No, I just don't think he can play.
You don't think he's healthy?
Bad.
Oh, okay. I mean,
this is why I didn't say that they shouldn't have traded for him because he wasn't a good player, because in Kansas City, he was a very good player. Uh-huh. I'm saying they shouldn't have traded for him because clearly the knees were an issue, and that, in my opinion, has come to fruition. I believe Sneed was looking for the payday, got the payday, and now that he's got the payday. You know, Andy Levitre, I think you guys remember when he was on the Titans.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I knew somebody who was close with Andy Levitre when I was on the radio in Louisville. And this person told me that, yeah, Andy Levitre's knees are so bad that basically he said, I'm just gutting it for one contract. And once I get the contract, like, my life, I can go forward. And you were the team that gave him the contract. Now, I don't think that was his public knowledge about how bad his knees or whatever were. But I think that does happen where players are like, especially pitchers in baseball, where they're like, yeah, I'm holding it together right now because I'm trying to get that contract. And then I get that contract and it's much easier to say, okay, let's go ahead and have the shoulder surgery now.
But Andy Levitre played for 3 more years with the Falcons after he left the Titans.
Right, but he was still, A, terrible, but B, his goal was to get that contract. That was his goal. His desire was, I have to get that contract. And I think that's what L'Jarius Sneed was trying to do, is, hey, I've got this knee, and I can tape it together and bubblegum it, and I can do all that.
Right.
I want the contract.
All theories by you with really nothing to back it up.
The real question here is whether or not you believe the Titans. And I don't believe the question, Titans, and it sounds like you believe the Titans.
Your only point that makes any sense is that it was a questionable move and a risky move to trade for him, knowing that there were issues with the knee. That I agree with you on. Mm-hmm. But all this other stuff that is complete speculation and conspiracy stuff.
And speaking of which, it's time for the complete speculation and conspiracy program from 2 to 6 p.m.
I have one very important question to ask, Derek.
Go ahead.
Do you believe O.J. Simpson was guilty?
Hell yeah, I believe he was
guilty. Okay, at least there's that.
Okay.
Yes. And with that, I don't sit here and lie.
And with that, Stillman & Company coming up next.
Beloved, loving your people. Have a safe, blessed, wonderful Thursday. Peace.